Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing another classic film. This one's from 1959. It is North by Northwest, directed by Alfred Hitchcock, starring Cary Grant, Eva Marie Saint, and James Mason. So we'll be talking about that coming up here today on the Silver Screen Podcast. But first, we have to start with a little bit of a downer. There was a lot of celebrity deaths this past week since our last recording. A few of the more notable ones included Olivia de Havilland, who, of course, was in Gone with the Wind and died at the age of 104. So lived a great life and a long life and got to do a lot of exciting things, but did pass away this week.
Died of natural causes in Paris.
And then
what
also,
more could you ask for?
I know, right? When you get to live in Paris, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So, and then Regis Philbin also died at the age of 88 from a heart attack. That was at his home in New York. So, of course, big television host, hosted a ton of things. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Live with Regis and Kelly, Live with Regis and Kathy Lee, a bunch of other stuff, too. So, but he was always seemed like he was just a very nice guy, too. I think everybody that worked with him said he was always just very upbeat and kind and a good, easy guy to work with.
Very beloved, for sure.
And then also, Peter Green, the co-founder of Fleetwood Mac, passed away. So that's sad news as well. You know, a big band there that had a lot of has a lot of hits and still songs that are played today and on the radio and classic hits radio and, you know, various places as well. So they're definitely a band that has a long legacy. And then just passing away a few minutes before we recorded this episode is Malik B, founding member of The Roots, who passed away at the age of 47. And as we're recording this, we don't know what his cause of death was. It just broke about 10 minutes before we started recording. But that's a sad one because he's not that old. 47 is not really that old. So, and The Roots are, of course, they've done a lot of music stuff. You may know them as the band on Jimmy Fallon. They're the house band on that show, but they have a big musical career outside of that show as well. And he was one of the founding members of The Roots. So sad to hear about that as well. So a lot of celebrity deaths this week. And it seems like they always come in groups of three. This was a grouping of four, so one more than normal. But that's the thing that normally happens is one person will pass away and then there'll be like two more. Just a weird coincidence normally, but that's a whole theory is that it's a group of three. So that was sad to hear about and sad that all those people passed away this week. Some of them younger, some of them just older, like Olivia de Havilland, like Regis that just died more of, you know, natural causes or old age or something like that. But some younger ones in there as well. So sad about all the deaths, but also happening this week, the Emmy nominations came out. So the Emmys will be happening on September 20th to transition to a little bit of a lighter tone. They announced that they will be going virtual, so they will not be having all these people gather in a theater in downtown LA for the Emmys. They're still trying to figure out how that's going to work. Jimmy Kimmel is still going to host the Emmys, so that will still be happening on September 20th, and they will be on ABC. But they're still trying to figure out how exactly they want to do that for the actual ceremony that will be happening in a little more than a month. So one nice thing was that there was a large percentage of people of color nominated for various roles in various places, which is always good to see. So there was a decent amount of diversity in the Emmy nominees this year.
I was so excited to see that. And then they said Kerry Washington, she's been nominated for four different categories for Emmys as well. I know one of the things was Little Fires Everywhere. Another is American Son, which is on Netflix. I actually think I'm planning on watching that this weekend, but I've heard it's excellent. I do think it might be a downer. I'm not positive, but I'm fairly positive. So just a warning. But if you want to watch that now, her Emmy nominated performance, you can see that on Netflix. And then you can watch Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu.
And Kerry Washington paid us to say that. So
no, but
that was an ad for
Kerry
Washington Productions.
Yes. Call me. Thank you.
If you're wondering, Netflix was the company with the most nominations, 160 nominations, which is crazy. So a lot of categories have Netflix shows in them. Makes sense, though. They release a very high amount of shows, so they've got a lot of Emmy nominations. HBO was second with 107, and then NBC was third with 47. So definitely the cable streaming companies leading the way. A lot of shows got a lot of nominations, which was cool to see. Schitt's Creek in its last season got 15 nominations. So that was neat. That's a pretty fun show on Netflix. I'll talk more about that in my recommendations coming up here in a few minutes. And Watchmen got the most nominations of any show, 26, which was on HBO. So I have not watched that yet, but might have to check that out now that it got 26 Emmy nominations.
Yeah, I've heard it's excellent. Like, it was actually when I was, we were talking about Palm Springs, that interview that I watched about Palm Springs, that was the last thing that some of them had watched, some of the actors had watched.
Okay.
And said it was the best, it was the most recent thing they binge watched and the best thing they'd seen in a long time.
Okay, good to know. So if you're wondering what came in second, it was The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel that has 20 nominations for Amazon, which normally they always win in a couple of different categories. So that was cool to see. So if you're just wondering what the nominations are in the big categories, which is basically just best comedy and best drama. So best comedy is Curb Your Enthusiasm, Dead to Me, The Good Place, Insecure, The Kominsky Method, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Schitt's Creek, and What We Do in the Shadows. Those are the comedy nominations. And then the drama nominations for this year. Hold on. Of course, they're on a different tab. Better Call Saul, The Crown, Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, The Mandalorian, Ozark, Stranger Things, and Succession. So stacked list of shows there. Some which I've watched, some which I haven't. But a lot of those I'm familiar with, and a lot of those are on Netflix or Hulu or HBO or something like that. So Disney Plus got in there with The Mandalorian, which was kind of cool to see. But some of these seem like the Emmys are weird because, like, if the show comes out that previous summer, it has to wait till like next year's Emmys. So like Stranger Things does not have a new season this year, but it's for season 3, which came out last summer. So it's weird how like that takes so long for some certain things. So those are some of the Emmy nominations. Also Emmy news as well. Alan Menken is now the proud holder of an EGOT, which is an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. He won a daytime Emmy earlier this week, so he now has his EGOT. If you don't know, Alan Menken, big, huge composer, does a lot of music for Disney movies, especially Disney movies back in like the 90s. He composed music on a lot of those, so you've definitely heard his songs before. But congrats to Alan Menken, another member of the EGOT club.
Way to go. Call us, Alan.
Exactly. Next up in news, we have some more movies getting delayed. That makes sense during, you know, this time that we're living in right now. The most recent one is Mulan got delayed, and they don't know when that's going to come out. So
such a bummer.
Delayed
the
that.
Other one, yes. The other one I'm not upset about. The other one I was like, you can delay that indefinitely. Like, for real, cancel it.
Yeah, so Avatar got pushed back as well. Avatar 2 was supposed to come out in 2021. It will now be coming out in 2022. So, sure, that got pushed back another year. It's been so long since the first one came out. I don't even care. Also,
I don't care.
For you Star Wars fans, Star Wars, I mean, they haven't announced what they're going to do next, but all the scheduled Star Wars and Avatar movies got pushed back a year. So there was supposed to be a Star Wars movie that comes out in 2022. That will now come out theoretically in 2023. So be 3 years until another Star Wars, which makes sense. They just wrapped up a trilogy, so they're still working on whatever they want to do next, I guess.
Gosh,
so it will be a while for
3 years.
I believe so. So that's what I'm reading from this article from CNN. So also Tenet set a new release date. I feel like we talk about this every week. Tenet now supposed to come out September 3rd in the US and August 26th internationally, because other countries are dealing with coronavirus better than we are. And so it will come out a week earlier in some countries and then open in select cities in the US on September 3rd. So that makes me think places where COVID is not insanely running rampant and some movie theaters are open. But we're about a month away from seeing if that happens or not. Wouldn't be shocked if that gets pushed back again, honestly, because I could totally see that happening. So, and then the final thing for news today is Taylor Swift came out with a new album. We didn't know about this last week when we recorded because she announced she was coming out with an album on Thursday and then dropped it on Friday. And it's called Folklore. Definitely a different take for Taylor, but I've listened to it a decent amount and I really like it. I think it's a really good Taylor Swift album. I think that, I don't know, it doesn't really have like summer vibes to me. It's definitely more like a fall feeling. Like, I feel like in 3 or 4 months, I'm going to listen to this album more because it'll be colder outside. And it just seems like that's the type of music for fall. But I do like the album, and I think it's definitely a different turn for her. And while all of us were like sitting inside reading books or, you know, watching movies or whatever, Taylor Swift was like, I'm going to write and record an album during coronavirus.
Hey,
so here it is.
What we're doing is admirable, too.
True.
But I I have not. I'm not ashamed to say I have not been a Swiftie from the beginning, but she's grown on me over time. I loved the documentary about her. I do think realistically, if I knew her, if she was a commoner like myself, I do think it's realistic that we would be friends and like attracted to each other, where we were born within a year of each other, both born in December.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of things in common, but this is definitely my favorite album. I really liked Red, and I bought Red, and I bought Folklore. I have not purchased the entire album of any of her other ones. I'm okay with this not being dancey summer vibes, because like I just feel like this, people are praising this album so much, and I think there's really a reason for it. I think I also thought it was hilarious that people who are true Taylor fans, which it's funny because I don't know everything about her, but she dated Harry Styles, and which who wouldn't want to, but Harry, they broke up. I don't think it was a great breakup, but they both have released, I think, their best albums this year. And people, well, he released his in December of 2019.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting timing. But at the same time, I'm not surprised, because think of how much changes in 10 years of your life from age like 20 to 30. Mm-hmm. All the stuff that you go through, especially if you're in the public eye. And I do think that you really kind of come into your own. I enjoyed being in my 20s, especially early 20s, but I like who I am more. And I feel like I think that that naturally happens to people as they age. So I'm not surprised that this album is as good as it is, but I really like it. Mm-hmm. So I don't regret not always being her biggest fan, but I've never hated her, but I'm really definitely a fan at this point.
Yeah. I really like this album. I like Reputation. That's probably another one of my favorites of hers.
That was good. I might like that better than
that's
Red.
That's a really good one as well. And then you mentioned like Harry Styles, and I think I agree with you there too. I think what he's doing now is way more interesting than whatever he was doing in One Direction. Like you can tell that he's way more talented songwriter than that band kind of allowed. So
definitely
no diss on One Direction, but I think he reminds me a lot of David Bowie too, just as like a current day David Bowie. That's kind of who I feel like I get the most comparisons to him with. But both of his albums are really good, and his newer album that came out about, like you said, 6 months ago is solid too. So, and then Kanye was supposed to come out with an album the same day as Taylor Swift, but that got delayed. So there wasn't any drama there. There could have been a lot of drama, but Kanye's album got pushed back because his wasn't done, which is a current very common theme with Kanye. He'll be like, yeah, it's done. Oh no, we're gonna push it back. It's out, but I remastered some of the songs and re-uploaded them to Spotify, so they're different now, so chug them out.
I think it's funny you said no drama though, because I think there's a lot of drama surrounding Kanye right now. It's just not his music that's attracting the drama. But I will say,
yes,
I've said before to you and on the podcast that I'm not a huge Kanye fan as a human, but I do care about him. Like like I would care about anybody, any human being. So I feel really bad that all of this stuff is happening in the public eye, because he is someone's dad and someone's son and someone's husband. And I think he's clearly having some sort of psychotic episode, and I hope people are helping him. It does seem like people are helping him.
Yeah.
But for a while there, I was like, where is everyone? What's going on here? So yeah, but his music, I mean, I think he's a talented musician, but I don't know that I'm very attracted to him at all as a person.
I don't like,
that I would want
to
know.
Like wait anxiously for the new Kanye album to come out or anything.
No, I
so
do not.
That's not a thing that I do. So, and it does appear that his friends are trying to help him out now, because I've heard stories of like celebrities going to Wyoming where he has the ranch or whatever and trying to, you know, talk to him and stuff like that. So hopefully that's going better for him there. We'll move on to recommendations now. I just have one recommendation. I'm still watching Schitt's Creek, which we talked about. Just got a bunch of Emmy nominations. So it's on Netflix, everything but the last season, which just wrapped up about a month ago. So that'll probably be on Netflix here shortly. But really good comedy. I've been watching it kind of this whole time the coronavirus is going on, just on and off. But the episodes are real short, 20 minutes. I know I've recommended it on here before, but I'm on season 4 and they did 6 seasons. So seasons 1 through 5 are on Netflix, and I just started season 4 today. So if you're looking for a light comedy that's just funny and has some good storytelling and stuff in it, and you know the characters play off of each other very well, then check that out on Netflix. Pretty funny show.
That's awesome. I've been meaning to watch Schitt's Creek. I actually had a friend this week that didn't catch on to it. Like, she didn't like it.
Okay.
But I don't, I'm still going to try it because other than her, everybody I know that's watched it has loved it.
And I will say,
I was going to say,
with the first season I thought was really good. The second season I thought was a little bit of a downer, just a little bit, not as funny. But then like the third and fourth seasons have been really good so far. So if you get into like a wall in the second season, I mean, that's just me personally, but I just didn't feel like it was as strong as some of the other ones.
Well, I finally finished Law & Order SVU. I've watched every episode.
Congrats.
Really proud.
You've solved all the cases.
I'm really proud of myself. I feel like I could work in SVU now. I'm kidding. But I have been watching, I went from that dark show to another dark show. I've been watching Hinterland on Netflix. My dad is obsessed with this show. He doesn't use words like obsessed. He's not like me, but... But he loves this show so much. He's watched it in its entirety. It's three seasons. I think he's watched it 3 or 4 times through. And in fact, I was texting him the other night and said, I'm watching Hinterland. I'm almost done. And he was like, oh, I'm watching it again too. but it is a great, it's a dark drama. It's another murder mystery show. It takes place in Wales, but I've said this before on the podcast. I think that England, well, the UK in general, UK, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, all of those countries do TV shows better that are like dark murder mystery shows. So it's fantastic. It's really, it's dark though. So if you're not looking to be down, don't watch it. And then I'm currently reading. So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijeoma Oluwo, I believe is how you say her last name. It is really, really good. There's a lot of material to get through and I suspected it would be difficult to read as a white person who has a lot to learn, and it is, but it's really, it's easy reading. Like it's easy to understand.
Okay.
And it's well written. So I highly recommend it. I'm halfway through, so I should have that done. My goal is to finish by the end of the month. So I have a couple days, so we'll see, but it's really good. Mm-hmm.
So those are our recommendations for this week. So check those out and we'll move into our review of North by Northwest now, of course, released in 1959 on September 17th. It's not rated. The MPAA during that time was like, we don't really care. Just go ahead and like throw out your movie. Well, just whatever. People will get the drift of like if it's appropriate to take their kids to it or not. It's 2 hours and 16 minutes. IMDb 8.3 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 99%. Audience 94%, very highly acclaimed movie all around. Box office wise, it made $71,000 in 1959 money. So accounting for inflation, that was a long time ago. That was, you know, 60 years. So that's probably a couple million in today, or, you know, I don't know, at least a decent amount in today's society.
Throw out a number. We believe you.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's obviously had a lot of success, though. Post-release in theaters, because it's still talked about today, 60 years later. So if you don't know, the synopsis is a New York City advertising executive goes on the run after being mistaken for a government agent by a group of foreign spies. And Cary Grant plays the main character, whose name is Roger. We'll talk more about him coming up here in a few minutes. Some critics' reviews for this one. First up, we have David Kerr of the Chicago Reader, who says, a great film, and certainly one of the most entertaining movies ever made, directed by Alfred Hitchcock at his peak. So... I mean, anytime you have a movie where you're going to be on the top of Mount Rushmore, it's going to be exciting. So, you know, that is definitely warranted. So next up is Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian, who says the rom-com suspense caper is a cinematic recipe that Alfred Hitchcock took with him to the grave. Certainly, I can't imagine anyone now succeeding in blending thrills, spills, caresses, and laughs the way he did in the sublime classic from 1959. And, you know, to quote Stefan from SNL, this movie does have a little bit of everything. So
this movie has everything. Thrills, spills, caresses, and laughs.
Romance.
Mount also, Rushmore. Jared, you read that beautifully.
Thank you.
There was such good emphasis in that critics review. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm trying to think of movies today that like blend all that stuff together. And I don't
I don't know.
I mean, as far as a thriller type mystery movie, Knives Out would be the one most recently that but that doesn't have any romance. It's not really there's no romance aspect in that really though. So
well,
you don't get that.
We,
so
we think there's going to be a romance, but there's not a romance.
But there's not. So it is funny and does have like, you know, a good story that keeps you guessing, but, and you know, some action and stuff, but not the romance aspect like this has. So it's really hard to find a movie that has all of those elements. And then finally, we have Amar Halfdan
I believe, of BBC.com. He says a thrower so improbable that it becomes quite brilliant in evading even the most fantastic of audience guesses. So you try to figure out where it's going and you don't know. So that's a good thriller mystery movie when you can't figure out the ending. So that's always good writing. So De Course, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. We're going to have some fun facts about him and fun facts about the movie as well, coming up right after the break here on the Silver Screen Podcast. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about North by Northwest, released in 1959, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. And Katie, you found some fun facts about Alfred Hitchcock and also just about the movie in general.
Yes, I found some very good facts for us. I did know a lot of these things, but I wanted to be accurate. So I looked these up on mentalfloss.com and factinate.com. But I felt like people needed to know about Hitchcock. I think a lot of people do. But since we're trying to educate people on some classics, I thought I would give you some extra info. So Hitchcock didn't have a great personal reputation. That's coming straight from me, but also I've read about him. As a director, he's always going to be considered one of the greats. But personally, he sucked. He was pretty abusive, misogynistic, and just all around not fantastic. He had a cameo. He loved doing cameos in 39 of his films. It's fun to catch him. And in this particular movie, if you watch right at the beginning, they're in New York City and the camera's kind of moving around and there's different people that are getting on buses and in cabs and things. And so you see him get on a bus. But you have to watch. It's within the first, I want to say, 2 minutes of the film.
Okay, so it's very quick.
Yes. He vowed, so he worked, I think if I get this right, Jimmy Stewart was in 3 Hitchcock films.
Okay.
Man Who Knew Too, this is from memory. So Man Who Knew Too Much, Rear Window, and Vertigo. I think that's it. I think that's right.
Okay.
Anyway, he loved working with Jimmy Stewart, but he vowed never to work with him again after Vertigo because he thought he was too old looking. So super rude. It's not like Alfred was ever a super good looking man.
No, not really.
Even look at pictures when he's young. He was not good looking. So, okay. He was horrified of law enforcement and eggs. Like he had phobias about these. And law enforcement, it was more specific to police. And it was because his father, there was an incident when he was young and his dad was trying to teach him like not to be a naughty little boy. And so he sent him to he had the police like lock him in a cell. And so for the rest of his life, he was horrified of police. He just thought eggs were disgusting. He could barely look at them.
Okay.
So, interesting.
Odd. Yeah.
Also, this is unreal. I did forget this. I'd heard it before, but I forgot. He never won an Oscar.
Okay.
Which
yeah, that is
insane.
A surprising fact. Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
It's kind of wild.
He was super strict about the movie Psycho, people seeing it in theaters. Psycho to me is like we talked about maybe doing that this week. I'm glad we chose this one, but Psycho is it might be the scariest movie I've ever seen, the original one. So it was based on a book. It wasn't completely like 100% like this book, but Hitchcock tried to buy all the copies of the book that were in print so no one could read it first. He barred Anthony Perkins and Janet Leigh, they're the leads of the film, from doing press for the film so people wouldn't find out anything about it. And people were not allowed in the theater once the movie had started. There's even like a clip of him saying, even if the queen herself, because he was an English person, even if the queen herself came in the theater and the movie had started, I wouldn't let her in.
I wish that was still a rule today in 2020.
I do wish that was a rule.
After the movie starts, then you don't get to come in. So, I mean,
yeah, I agree
you have,
with you.
Especially with 20 minutes of previews nowadays, like if the movie says it starts at 7, it's not going to start till 7:20. So like,
right.
If you can't get there by then just go to the next showing. So
agreed.
But I get why he did that because it totally, I mean, if somebody walks in, it just takes your distraction away from the movie and you're like, oh, this person's coming in late. Where are they going to sit? Are they going to sit right here? You know, all that stuff. So that makes
definitely
sense.
8 of his films are on the National Film Registry. I know we've talked about that a couple times with Big Lebowski and some others. So the 8 films are The Birds, Rear Window, Rebecca, Notorious, North by Northwest, Shadow of a Doubt, Vertigo, and Psycho. Also, so random, but he hated pregnant women. He couldn't stand to be around them. He thought they were disgusting and ugly, including his wife, Alma, who he was married to for, I think, over 60 years. And she was pregnant with their one daughter. They only had one child, and he thought she was disgusting then. So just tells you a lot about his character.
Yes.
And the grossest thing He was super into pranks, and he also was, he lusted after a bunch of actresses. I don't know that he acted as in fully committed to sleeping with actresses, but he definitely was gross towards them and abusive in his behavior. But most famously, he did this to Tippi Hedren, who was, she is Melanie Griffith's mother.
Okay.
So Melanie Griffith, if you don't know her, Melanie Griffith is Dakota Johnson's mother. So it's definitely, their family is a Hollywood dynasty for sure. And if you look at them, if you look at pictures of them, you can definitely tell the family resemblance. But he was terrible to Tippi Hedren. And if you look up stories, he did horrible things to her. She was the star of the movie Birds. She was terrified of birds. He would do things like, there was one scene where he, there were real birds that he had flying around, and one almost took her eye out.
Jeez.
And he thought this was hilarious and wouldn't get her help. And he was just horrible. I don't know if I've gotten that across to you, how much I don't. Yeah. Respect or admire Alfred Hitchcock, but his movies are amazing.
Did you ever? So, I never watched. Did you watch that movie that came out a few years ago with Anthony Hopkins where he played Hitchcock about the making of
really
Psycho? I haven't watched it, that either. It's him and Helen Mirren. I'm looking at it right now.
Yes.
But that might, if you're interested in like learning more about Alfred Hitchcock, I think that goes into some more details of his career in general and just that movie and stuff like that. So
yeah,
check that out
and
if
no
you want to learn more.
No one's no one's perfect, so I realize this man is dead. He can't speak for himself. But just from everything I've read, it does seem that there's a general consensus that he
wasn't great.
He didn't do things fully above board, and he didn't treat people fairly. So it's great that he had a brilliant mind, but unfortunately, he had a poor personality to go with it.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll move into the cast for this movie. It's a pretty small cast. I mean, there's a lot of like people walking around, but in terms of like people that we're actually focused on, it's not that many. So first up, though, we have Cary Grant, who plays Roger in the movie.
I love Cary Grant. Thank you for that crush alert. I think Cary Grant to this day is one of the most handsome people I've ever seen in my life, including just the way he would talk and everything. It wasn't just the way he looked, but he was a beautiful man. He plays Roger Thornhill in this movie. We did cover him in episode 62 of the podcast when we reviewed The Philadelphia Story. So that was recent, but I added some different films for you from his repertoire. He's known for Father Goose, To Catch a Thief, which is fantastic. That's with Grace Kelly. His Girl Friday, An Affair to Remember, which is similar to Sleepless in Seattle. That's with Deborah Kerr. Or Carr. I always forget which one it actually is. It looks like Kerr, but I think it's pronounced Carr. Doesn't matter. Anyway, okay. He's also in my favorite Audrey Hepburn movie ever, Charade. We mentioned this in that episode 62, but I love talking about this. He was born Archibald Alec Leach. And he was originally from England, but he didn't have a true like English accent. So that's why he has such an interesting way of speaking. And then he was the George Clooney of his time. We mentioned I did like a Hollywood, not doppelganger, but a similar person of today's standard in that episode. So he basically was the George Clooney of his time. He was nominated for 2 acting Oscars, but he didn't win. But he did get an honorary Oscar in 1970.
Very nice.
This person I was most excited to cover, it's Eva Marie Saint. She plays Eve Kendall in the movie. I pumped Jared because I had heard this but forgot when I was looking this up. She is still alive and she has acting credits as recently as 2019. She was born July 4th in 1924, so she just turned 96. And she was married to the same man, a producer named Jeffrey Hayden, for 65 years. And he only died in 2016. They had 2 kids together. And then along with North by Northwest, Saint was best known for On the Waterfront, which is starring Marlon Brando as well. She won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar in 1955 for her role in that movie. I've only seen it once, but I know it was very good. I'm not a huge Brando fan. He's
Me
another
neither.
Person that I'm like, you're a horrible human. But I appreciate how good you were at acting. but she, you might recognize her from, like, because I always think it's neat. Some people today might not be into old movies or they might not know who we're talking about. So the movie that I think would be most popular in today's standards that was recent is Superman Returns, the one with Brandon Routh. She was in that she played Martha Kent. And then she was also in Winter's Tale alongside Colin Farrell in 2014. And I thought this was also hilarious because the last episode on that episode of Philadelphia Story, I said that I was trying to look up upcoming projects for all these people that had passed away. And this time I actually did have to look because she is still alive. Amazing. And next up, we have James Mason. He plays Philip Van Damme. What a fantastic name for a character. He was an English actor as well. He has one of the coolest voices I've ever heard. I actually think he's up there with James Earl Jones. My dad is especially fond of James Mason. He was in a ton of movies back in the day. He was known for Lolita, A Star is Born, The Verdict, and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. He was nominated for 3 acting Oscars, one for A Star is Born. That's the 1954 version with Judy Garland, Georgie Girl, and The Verdict, where he got to star alongside Paul Newman, another one of my favorites.
Very cool.
And then last, thank you. And lastly, there's a great supporting cast in this film. I wanted to list things that you're in so you might know them. So Martin Landau was in this. He was in Charade with Audrey Hepburn as well, and also Entourage as an older man, so you would recognize him if you loved that show like I did on HBO. Jessie Royce Landis, she's in To Catch a Thief with Cary Grant and Grace Kelly, if you ever watched that. And Edward Platt looked so familiar, and I couldn't think why. He was in the TV series Get Smart, the original TV series Get Smart, not the movie with Steve Carell. And but all of them have very recognizable faces, but if you want to see them in other things, there's a good place to start for you.
Very nice. So that's the cast for North by Northwest. And before we get into our likes and dislikes, we'll just put a spoiler alert out here now, because it's kind of hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it. But if you're interested, then check out North by Northwest and come back. But basically, the plot for this movie is that Cary Grant's character, his name is Roger, but he's mistaken for a man named George Kaplan, who they're looking for, and he is taken, and they think he is Kaplan. He's not really Kaplan, and then he meets Eva Marie Saint, who Yorn is working with the bad guys. But she kind of lures him to, you know, be attracted to her. So that happens, and then they go on a big chase kind of all across the country, and eventually, you know, we have the end of the movie. But if you hear us talk about, you know, Kaplan or Thornhill, that's basically, I mean, Cary Grant's playing that same character. It's just that sometimes he's mistaken for one character and sometimes he's, you know, mentioned by his real name. So that's kind of like the main plot of the movie. There's a lot more that happens there, but basically just know that, you know, it's a guy in mistaken identity, and now he's trying to clear his name because he didn't really do anything wrong. So, I know you have a lot of likes for this movie because it's one of your favorites, but the acting in this movie is really good, in addition to a lot of other things. But the acting, I noticed that too. It really stands out to me that this movie was made in the late 50s, but the acting is really solid. Sometimes old movies can have this like thing that the actors do where you can definitely tell it's like an older movie. Like Philadelphia Story had some of that, where it's just like overacting, or like they do a weird thing with their voice and they're like doing this weird accent or whatever. But I didn't feel any of that in this movie. Granted, it was made 20 years after that, but it felt very natural, like it could have been made today and it still would have been an interesting story and an interesting movie, and that it felt like it was realistic.
Definitely. I think Cary Grant is one of those people too that I assume he was exactly that way in real life, but I'll never know. That he's just so witty. He's just quick with how he responds to things. You know, even when he was getting kidnapped, he was cool as a cucumber. He got kind of upset. He tried to jump out of the moving car and stuff like that. But he also was just kind of like, where are we going? Oh, cold shoulder, huh? Like, but it seemed so natural. It didn't seem like he was remembering lines that he read in a script. It seemed like something that I would really imagine Cary Grant would say. And then Eva Marie Saint, I felt like she really held her own. I loved that she was like this very strong-willed woman as well, that would kind of, she flirted with him. And that was, of course, like a part that she was playing because she was trying to lure him, like you said, back to the creepy mansion and all of that. But I really liked how she played this role, and it seemed very believable. And I like that she wasn't a damsel in distress character, which is, it was not common at that time, especially like the 50s leading up to the 60s. So that was just really refreshing. And then James Mason and Martin Landau as the main two villains are fantastic at those roles too. They're just creepy, and you can't tell if they're playing each other. Like there's that one scene where Martin Landau shoots the gun, but it's filled with blanks.
Yeah. Yep.
But you're not, you know, for that, even I've seen this movie, I think I've seen this movie at least 6 times. And I always forget that's going to happen. And I'm like, oh, he's shooting James Mason, but that's not really what's happening. He's just proving that there's blanks in the gun, but it's totally believable that those two would turn on each other.
Also, I don't know if you felt this way or not, but Eva Marie Saint's character in this movie reminded me a lot of Betty Draper from Mad Men.
Yes.
I know that this obviously came out way before Mad Men, but I feel like that character was somewhat inspired by Eva Marie Saint, and especially this movie in general. Like, even the hairstyles are very similar to, like, Betty Draper's, January Jones's character on Mad Men. Yeah. So.
Well, the time period is the same. So that totally makes sense. But you couldn't be more right. I think they are very similar. And I wouldn't be surprised if they based some of Betty Draper's character on Eve Kendall.
So I also liked the writing for this movie. We mentioned that as well. It was not written by Hitchcock. We will mention that. It was written by Ernest Lehman, who wrote a bunch of different movies and was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, but actually did not win any except for a Lifetime Achievement Award. But so it was written by him. And I really like the script, though. I think it, like you said, it's funny in some parts. It's definitely dramatic in certain places. But Cary Grant does have a lot of good one-liners in this movie, and a lot of good, like, just quips in general. So those were probably somewhere improvised, but a lot were the result of writing and his delivery of those lines. So I thought the script was very, I mean, I laughed out loud a couple of times while watching this. It was my first time watching
me too.
It, but I was like, that was a funny joke. So. Another thing that's cool about this movie is it has a lot of settings, and I feel like that's one thing that movies after this movie came out really took it upon themselves to do. Like, you watch a lot of older movies, and sometimes they don't go to a lot of different settings. They kind of stay in one general area or one like type of location. But Hitchcock's like, no, I want to go here, and then I want to go on this train, and then I want to have this scene in a cornfield, and then I want to be at Mount Rushmore, and then I want to do this and be at an auction, and, like, you know, 20 different places, basically, which nowadays that's very common for a movie to do. But I feel like this was kind of pioneered the way for that a little bit in terms of, like, we can use a lot of different locations to tell our story.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I loved the mansion. Is so creepy, and it looks like something like, is it Frank Lloyd Wright?
Okay. Yeah. Design? The famous architect. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he also, the hotel bar is so cool that they meet in, and then part of it takes place, the cornfield, the very famous scene. If you all haven't seen this movie, there's a really famous scene of a biplane that is trying to hit Cary Grant while he's running. That takes place, it's supposed to be in Indiana, which is cool. Obviously, we're big fans. And then Mount Rushmore is where the climax of the movie happens, and they're actually sliding down Mount Rushmore. There's a joke with my family about that because my mom... I wasn't sure if I was going to bring this up because I don't remember exactly what she says, but for some reason she has a harder time remembering that this film is called North by Northwest. So she would refer to it as something about sliding down the cement man's nose. And my dad's always like, Patty, what? It's called North by Northwest, and that's Mount Rushmore. It's ridiculous. I don't think she'll be embarrassed by that because she does it all the time. Like, now that's like our family joke. We don't even really, I call it North by Northwest, but anyway. But Mount Rushmore is, of course, where the climax of the movie takes place. And it's, what an interesting place to have this big like ending scene.
Yeah, that is a unique location, a national monument. So some other scenes that I really liked in this movie were the auction scene. I think that one's a really good scene in terms of, like,
tense tension.
He's trying to get himself arrested so that he can get out of the situation because he's trying to avoid the other Van Damme that's there as well. So he's, like, trying to get himself out of that situation. And so he just decides to be a crazy, you know, bidder at the auction. Mm-hmm. But that was a really good scene. I also like the scene at the end where he's looking overhead at the, you know, the room that they're in and kind of what their plan is, and, you know, tries to alert Eva Marie Saint's character by, like, throwing the matchbox down there. And that right there, I thought was really good. Really cool filmmaking by Hitchcock to, like, shoot that from above. But also, and again, another, like, tense moment that the last 15-20 minutes are pretty tense while he's trying to figure all that out. So
yeah, I'm glad you brought up the camera angles and camera work, because Hitchcock, I felt like that was so, it was so Hitchcockian. Like, he thought of all these cool different angles and ways to film that other people just didn't use. And another thing that I love that is very indicative of a Hitchcock film is specific theme music. I love the music in this film. And there's so many Hitchcock movies, too, that I can at least hum for you the beginning, like the main scene. Or, like, even in Psycho, everybody knows the reet, reet, reet. And that's when she's getting murdered in the shower, because Hitchcock was so good at finding these composers that would make this, like, really distinct music and theme mm-hmm. song or like score for the film. So I loved that about this one.
Another like I had was the opening credits are very cool, just like very ahead of their time for 1959. They look very modern and like slanting the text and the camera angles. And again, with the camera angles, but the opening credits look really cool. So that was another like of mine. And then I know one of your likes, I don't know how much I like this as much as you do or not, but you liked the abrupt ending where it just kind of ends and we move on to the end of the movie and it's over.
Yes, I love that. I mean, the first time I saw it, I think I was a little frustrated because it was so sudden. But I really like about this movie, it's bigger than just that last scene. I like that there's not a lot of pomp and circumstance. Like, mm-hmm. we don't need a ton. There's an excellent car scene, and then he's getting there's chased by the plane. Like, that's all plane really chase. Exciting.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but you don't need, like, a ton of explosions. You don't need people getting murdered left and right. You don't need everyone to sleep with everybody else. Like, it's that theme that happens in old movies that I brought up with our last few that I just like so much better than what we're doing now. And they have original stories and stuff. But I love how this film, it was like, are they going to die? Are they going to fall off Mount Rushmore? And then they're married and they're happy and they're on a train ride. It's just such a sweet, it's a sweet ending, but it's also not ridiculous. Like, you could tell they were falling in love. That's not hard to believe that that's how it ended.
Yeah. So that is one thing that you mentioned about movies, you know, that were different in that time period versus today, is that today, you know, you have movies that have like 20 car chases, or like, you know, there's 10 scenes where stuff blows up. Like, you think of the Fast and Furious movies or like James Bond movies or something like that, where there's just tons and tons of stuff like that. And this movie didn't really need a lot of that, which is nice. And it still moves the story along well and really works well, even using some of those action sequences, but not like a ton of them like we see in current day movies. So with that, we'll move on to our dislikes real quick before we give our grades for North by Northwest. One dislike is the Mount Rushmore scene is a little unbelievable at parts. I mean, I get that it's a movie, but like they're sliding yeah. down Mount Rushmore. And then, you know, the very end of the movie, I feel like we built up all that tension. And then obviously you see him on the train, but like you don't see him actually like pick her back up or anything. And then you think he's going to get like his hand crushed and fall down, which doesn't happen. But like she like even Marie Saint like falls down the side of Mount Rushmore, and like her scream is just like so unnatural for what would actually be happening in that situation. And then you pointed out that like she's still holding onto her bag when she's like falling 30 feet or whatever.
Yes, that made me laugh out loud. I think what made me laugh is I didn't notice it for a while.
Okay.
Like there's a part where they're hanging there about to fall yep. off Mount Rushmore to their deaths, and someone's already fallen down. Like they've already seen someone die.
Yeah.
And then I noticed her purse, she was holding her purse, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And also she, like when she went back, there was that scene, that tense scene you and I really like, where the guys are thinking about killing her, or they're like, we're going to take her with us and then kill her. And she's like, oh, my earrings. And like, went to go find her earrings. And I thought, are these diamond earrings? Like if they're like $10 earrings from icing or something, you don't need to go back for them. But I thought that was hilarious that she did that. But it also seems realistic to me that some like my mama, my grandmother that passed away last year that I just mm-hmm. adored, she would take a purse everywhere. Like
okay.
That is such a believable thing to me of a woman of that time period. That's like my handbag, my pocketbook. That's what they would say.
Yes.
My pocketbook has to go with me everywhere. I won't put this thing down. So part of me thought that was just adorable. And part of me was like, that is the dumbest. The first thing I would pitch off Mount Rushmore is my bag. but I thought that was funny. And then that does lead me to believe another thing that I think was that I didn't love, but I understand, is that I did think it was pretty sexist at times.
Yeah.
Like, even going back for the earrings, or even the fact that like she could coerce Cary Grant's character, of course, because she's a female and all you have to do is be a female. And apparently you can just make people do whatever you want for all time. And that's just simply not true. And she didn't seem... I think she seemed very strong-willed, but she seemed very taken advantage of by not Roger Thornhill, James Mason's character. I thought
yeah.
that she, you know, he just treated her badly. And I thought, oh, yeah, what an original idea back then. But it makes sense as well, both because of how Hitchcock treated females, but also because it was the 1960s, early 1960s.
Yes. So, and then the other dislike that you had is that Cary Grant has to go to jail, but he only has to pay a $300 fine back in 1960s money, which is like very low for a fine to get out of jail.
But also, he was driving while intoxicated, so drunk, he almost killed multiple people. He
and gets himself,
taken into jail. Yeah, and he's ranting and raving, and then they set him free after his mom comes or whatever, but they give him a ticket for $300. And I think it's just that because of 2020, everything that's happening, and just because of the time period I've lived in so far, to me, I can't help but think, like, would they ever treat a black man that way? And they wouldn't. Like, law enforcement just simply wouldn't. They wouldn't be like, you know what? On your way. It's okay. Don't do it again. Here's $300, a $300 ticket, and you can be on your way. Like, I just don't think that they would treat people fairly then, but definitely, but not now. But again, because of when this movie was made, I'm not surprised that that was portrayed that way.
And my only other dislike is that this movie, I get that it's a movie and a mystery and stuff like that, but I feel like this whole situation could have been avoided if he was just able to show some ID or have some alibis there in the beginning of the movie. That's like, no, he's not. Like, the people that he was like dining with did not stand up for him at all. Like, hey, why are you taking him? Like, what, that's not who you want. This is this guy. Yeah. Like, you know, and obviously you have to get into it somehow and get the movie started. But I just felt like that at the beginning was like, nobody's going to stand up for him. He doesn't have ID proving that, you know, he's who he says he is. His employer can't verify that, you know, any of this stuff.
I know.
So
it's just far-fetched. That's my main beef with this movie is it's so far-fetched and at points hysterical because it's so unbelievable. But yes.
So with that, we'll move on to our grades for North by Northwest. You can go ahead and go first on this episode. What are you going to give it?
I mean, this really is, it's one of my favorite Hitchcock movies, but it is one of my favorite movies because it has everything I love. I love drama, romance, mystery, murder. I love anything like that. So, and I like good settings, costumes. I didn't even mention the costumes, but I think it goes without saying any classic movie like this, I just adore their costumes. Anyway, I think it's almost a perfect film for me, especially considering when it was made, what they were working with, and what it was like in the 60s. So I give this a 98.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm going to go. This is my first time watching it. I don't think I ever mentioned that. But
Okay.
I'm going to go a little bit lower than you. I liked it. I didn't love it. I don't know why. I thought it was a little too long in certain parts. Like the middle was a little long for me. And then like some things, like I said, were just a little unbelievable, which I got past most of that. But some of it was just a little outrageous. So I'm still going to give it a decent score, though. 85 out of 100 for North by Northwest. So not in the 90s, but I did like it. And I did enjoy watching it. It's definitely a movie I would watch again. So I'm going to give it an 85. So those are our grades for North by Northwest. So check it out. It's on HBO Max. We didn't mention that either. You can watch it for free there if you have HBO Max subscription. If not, Katie, you rented it, right? For
$3
or whatever.
Yes, I rented it for $4 on YouTube.
Very nice. Yep. So you can find it there as well if you want to catch up on Hitchcock movies or watch this one. So you can watch, you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and then just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. You can find us there and then listen to the show wherever you're listening now. That really is great. And be sure to rate and review the show as well, either with a little blurb about how you like the show, or if you don't like the show, all comments are accepted. And then a star rating is always nice too if you're listening in Apple Podcasts or somewhere else that does that. That's always great as well. And then the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, we're going to do another classic movie that was a suggestion that came from one of our listeners. It was your friend Danielle, correct? That suggested this movie. So we thank her for this. This is Gentlemen's Prefer Blondes with Marilyn Monroe, which came out about in the 50s. So another classic, iconic movie. It's a musical, so a little bit different tone than North by Northwest, but another classic. And I've never seen this before. So
I
excited
haven't
to
either.
Watch
I'm
it.
I'm so pumped. Yeah, I really do like Marilyn Monroe. I prefer Audrey Hepburn. I feel like they're always... They shouldn't be pitted against one another. They were completely different women doing completely different movies. But
yes.
I feel like they both had a lasting impression on especially young women growing up. And so I definitely would pick Audrey, but I had a lot of respect and like Marilyn Monroe quite a bit.
Nice. So that will be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, reviewing Gentlemen's Prefer Blondes.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.